if we all approached that and that just from a listening mindset and then to the best of our ability took what people were actually telling us was hard or that we might be able to help with, and in future conversations and work and decisions use that to guide it, we will collectively be better for kids.
Hey everybody, and thanks for tuning in to this edition of Future Ready's Leading Through Unprecedented Time. With me today, longtime Future Ready advisor for our principal strand, principal of the year out of Minnesota, is the one and only Brad Gustafson. Brad, it is awesome to have you here today. Can you take a moment to introduce yourself and where you're from?
Sure. Brad Gustafson from Minnesota, and it's just really great to connect with everyone. I'm serving in an elementary school, loving life and up the approximately 800 kiddos we get to work with, and then of course the Future Ready partnership that we've had over the years. So
good to catch up. Thanks, Brad. It's always good to see you. You know, I wanted you to spend some time, if you could. Obviously, the end of last school year was a bit of chaos on a lot of fronts, so much uncertainty, but I know we continued to see teachers just step up and run through walls and do amazing things regardless of the circumstances. Would you take a couple minutes and just reflect as a principal on the end of last school year, that last third to a quarter, COVID-19, it's still front and center on everybody's minds, but just kind of lessons learned or things that really came to the forefront during all that?
Yeah. So like this was the first year I can remember in my whole career. This is my finished up my 12th year as a principal, but usually when people ask, like, honestly, it's kind of embarrassing, Tom, when's the last day of school? Sometimes I don't even know that because the work continues, right? The planning and the stuff. But this was the year where I was well aware of the last day of school, and I felt like I crawled across the line along with a lot of other people across the country. But in that journey of crawling across the line, like the thing that continually I was reminded of is just the importance of taking care of us and one another and kids, not on a superficial level where it maybe feels good to mention the importance of relationships, but on a really deep level where you see, like, showing up and saying, I see you, and how can I help? And then backing that up with grace and flexibility and really whatever teachers need, because in turn, they're giving whatever kids and families need, the space, the flexibility, the support. Like, that was so apparent. And then to have that reciprocated by our team, not just for me, but for everyone. But that's like the biggest thing I walked away with. Like, anything we do, Tom, over the summer and into the future to build trust with our teams and our parents, like real authentic trust, where they know that even apart from this job and this work we get to do, that we care, that we actually care and are flexible enough to show that care, even when it's not convenient or always obvious how that's going to work or play out. Like, that stuff matters more, I think, that more than anything.
Yeah, trust and flexibility and care, hitting it right from the get-go where it matters most, for sure. You know, Brad, one of the things that I'm seeing this summer that we've seen online, and you know, some parents have really questioned out there this idea of learning loss. And again, kudos to our parents who also stepped up and became that coach or that teacher or that side-by-side instructor, because I know parents have really stepped up in this mix really as well. But is this idea of learning loss, and you know, some of us looking at it, we've been so data-driven as schools, good or bad in that regard, right? And looking at this idea of kind of learning loss, or, you know, kids that these gaps could grow. You know, we've talked about the summer slide forever, but now some are looking at it like, wow, it's even going to be larger this year. What are you doing as an elementary principal with your team to really look at some of those gaps to make sure that we're helping kids as much as we can to close those gaps that may be there?
Yeah, one of the things our team does is we look at kiddos as whole learners and people. So instead of just isolating learning loss to a potential score or skill or standard, we continue to lean into that and look at social emotional learning and some of the social experiences kids maybe didn't get or that looked different. So I'm really confident in our team and our system for like diagnosing and seeing where kids are at, what their readiness level is, where the gaps are. I feel really good that we'll be able to do that. But I also feel really good that also on that same radar, as an additional leading question, we're asking about, like, What do kids need to have to be able to be ready to be a first grader? Because in kindergarten, there's a lot of play-based learning, social learning, and just how to like participate in a conversation on a rug, a rainbow rug together. Whereas that didn't, you know, on a Zoom call, that looks a lot different. So I'm assuming that even though we're what summer, kindergarten teachers are probably still recovering from managing class-wide Zoom calls with their kids. So kudos to them and every educator for that matter. But like, that's what our team is doing. Like, let's look at it holistically and not just focus on reading and math, but also like the other gaps that are tragically that we're reminded of far too often, like earlier this summer, the murder of George Floyd. Like, what learning gaps are there that we need to address as a system, and what conversations and parts of history and voices need to be amplified and looked at differently, like drastically differently. Like, that's a whole nother layer to this that I think a lot of our kiddos are craving and deserving and hurting for not having. So that's yes. a big answer, but I think it just speaks to the importance of the question.
Absolutely. And it's really gaps in curriculum, you know, and gaps in curriculum that have not been designed to represent our country on the whole. And those are some real big issues that we have to address, as, you know, as you're right, that murder is front and center on everybody's minds, and it still continues to be this summer. But so let's take a look at, you know, let's talk big picture there for a moment. As a principal, you're looking at next year with so many unknowns in place. I know states at this recording are still all over the map in terms of guidance or expectations, in terms of what it's going to look like. You know, are we back in school? Are we not back in school? As a principal, what are you doing to prepare for that? What are some of those things that are on your plate that you're wrestling with that we might not have answers to even at this point? What does that look like for you for next year?
Sure. Well, there are multiple scenarios that could play out. And I think everyone's probably heard this terminology quite a bit over the summer, you know, the hybrid option, the, you know, distance option, remote, or maybe the full-fledged face-to-face bricks and mortar or smaller class size. So what we're trying to do is have scenarios ready so that we're like hitting the ground running once there's more clarity and decisions are made at the state, local, and federal level. So for example, what does that actually look like? Well, in developing a master schedule, making sure the contingency planning and space is needed to keep kids safe for however we end up doing lunch. So I won't get into too many details on that. I think the other thing is just like backing up a little bit and making sure that our people are okay, to go back to what we talked about earlier. Like the most prepared schools, I think, are going to be ones also where the educators and the teachers are supported and like don't feel guilty for refreshing, recovering, getting supported, recharging over the summer so that they can do the heavy lift of this work and like the mental gymnastics required to be super flexible and to help kids who are hurting, even though you can't reach out and touch them initially, or at least that's how we ended this school year. I think the other thing, Tom, just like this is the thing that helped me the most through this, helped me because it helped me help others. Instead of mourning all the things kids are losing and that we can't do for them, like at the end of last year, it was a lot of the graduations and just the rites of passage in the last week or two of school. It's devastating. Then you think about seniors, like I'm at an elementary level and fifth grade graduation is a big deal. Imagine being a 12th grader, but regardless, putting the focus on, well, what can we do and what are we going to do? And yes, it might look different, but it can be pretty spectacular and meaningful, and we can just do lots of listening and create these experiences. So here's one little highlight that our team did, and it gives me hope for kind of reimagining what the fall can and will look like. We wanted like the last week of school to be really special for kids, so our team put together this virtual academy, and we got like 50 or so submissions where educators, and then we even had some Greenwood alumni, like former students and high school varsity coaches, they all created a mini class, and I use that term very loosely, like rock painting, bass fishing, a book club, just little things that kids could choose, just optional, to enjoy the last week of school. And that was different than anything our team in school had done before, but that was a new experience. And I think the beauty for that for me was seeing how kids, like the power of connection. It wasn't just the choice or the learner empowerment where they could pick, but it was really the people, like choosing past teachers who they loved, who they got to reconnect with and learn from, even if the topic wasn't super motivating, although the topics were motivating, or seeing future teachers who they would have down the road. Like the power of people and relationships in that, like carrying that forward, I could see us doing a lot more with that, regardless of how this all plays out and if we're together or not together, just having the mindset, you know, this is really unfortunate and hard, and let's talk and let's listen and figure this out. But at the end of the day, it's what experiences and takeaway we want our kids to have, because we actually get to deliver on those.
Yeah, these obstacles really do bring opportunities. And, you know, when we look at that, look at all the good that's happening. And sometimes we really do have to be conscious of the lens that we choose. And I agree, you're spot on. You know, we can't minimize the loss. We can grieve the loss related to things that kids didn't get to experience. As a dad of a kindergartner, we didn't get to do kindergarten graduation. And so I have empathy, certainly, for those kinds of things. But in turn, amazing things have happened, and educators have gone above and beyond, gotten very creative, done things like that to give them opportunities that wouldn't have existed had it been. So, you know, Brad, you're such an advocate for teachers. You're such an advocate for professional learning. You do a lot of that across the country, training other staffs and doing those things. How has professional learning shifted, or has it, in the past number of months? What do you anticipate moving forward just to support our teachers in this mix?
Yeah. So what I've kind of noticed, Tom, is that a lot of the research and the things that always matter to teachers still matter. And I don't say that just in a cliche sense. I think we should probably take a second to actually name some of those things, like teacher voice and being responsive to what they actually need in a way that's manageable for them and timely and responsive. Like, that still matters. Giving them the sustained focus so that they can build traction and momentum and coherence across the system, like, that matters. But we haven't been great at that. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, the pendulum swings and stuff like that, but building that cohesion. So if you have a literacy focused initiative, like creating book access or book joy for kiddos, like having that be a focus over multiple years, and, you know, having, whether it's the same internal staff leaders leading those conversations, building staff capacity, and or having outside people come in and complement that work, whatever the topic is, like, stick with it long enough so people know that it matters, right? And that they can build up their leadership. So within knowing some of the research, and this is part of my, like, it's a little embarrassing to even say, but part of the dissertation work that I did not too long ago, like, I got to learn all about, like, the PD things that actually matter to people, and that research showed actually made a difference on multiple levels. And that was some of the stuff that thankfully is kind of stuck, and I try to circle back to. But within that framework then, like, what does that look like if it has to be partially online, or like the need that people actually have to get together and have conversations like this or attend conferences? Because we do get a lot out of those things above and beyond the content, but the relationships, the networking, the ability to detach from some other responsibilities and fully immerse in that learning, like, there is inherent value in that stuff. So how do you have those worlds combined? So, like, just from personal experience, and kind of like you said, having the chance to work with some different states and stuff on some of the longer term stuff over Zoom, for example, and other electronic platforms, is just trying to be really responsive to where people are at, what their strengths are at, like what do you currently got going on that you love and you want to flex and strength, and then trying to have conversations about where do you want to go next, and then, like, even broadening the radar.
Yeah. So, Brad, one of the things I've always respected about your work, and as you just said, the strengths of the child, like, you value truly every individual. And that's not just something you say, it's evident in all of your work. And having been a Future Ready advisor, you know that equity is so core to our work, equity and access, equity and opportunity. So talk to us a little bit about, as an elementary principal, how are you keeping equity at the forefront, particularly for our most marginalized groups? What's that look like in decision making? And what does that look like to make sure that those groups are always a priority?
Okay. So it feels like it's, and it's probably not accurate, but it feels like those questions and conversations come up every, like, decision and effort and initiative that we do that we did with distance learning. And then even looking into the future, And that's something that, even though it feels like it's happening a lot, and thank goodness for that, we and I need to get better at asking. Like, it's just a lens that you don't want to have as an add-on lens. Okay, I remembered today, I'm going to ask through this particular lens, but like wearing the goggles, if you will, that like the permanent goggles, like, how might this impact this kiddo, this family, whose voice was absent from this decision, and our, you know, the positive and negative outcomes that could come from it. So that's like one approach, just conversation. And it's so, we all can do that. We can all have conversations about like these experiences we were giving kids or trying to give kids. We had to ask those along the way quite often. And then the other thing is really listening and making sure that the people who are answering the question can speak to it from direct experience, because there is such, like, our strength is our diversity. And if it were just people who were all born in 1977 answering the question, I'm just using that as an example, it's the year that's near and dear to my heart, well, then the musical tastes are going to be biased. The everything is going to be, you know, their affinity for Legos and the, you know, all the things I love, like, those are great and they can enhance a school culture, but also it's pretty awesome and hugely profoundly important that there's a wide range of people having the conversation, asking the question, and then holding each other accountable to make sure that it's being asked in times that it's being forgotten. So it's a really simple thing that we can do, like just ask about, but also there's some layers and depth to it that sometimes maybe can be missed.
Absolutely. When we look at future ready leadership, and I've heard it as you reflect today in the podcast, you know, it's really asking those critical questions and asking them of ourselves as leaders first and foremost, but then not being afraid to say, you know what, my lens was off and I was missing that. And you know what, I need to think about that differently. And that diversity is our strength. So well said on that end. So let me ask you two more quick questions. One is, one of the things that I've really respected about your work over the years, you, in my opinion, are as humanistic as it gets, like that whole child, the relational side of things. How can you help make sure, how can educators make sure that they keep relationships and just the core to that human connection at the heart of learning and not get caught up into all the other things that we can get caught up at? You know, do we see data points and test scores as they walk through our hallway, or we see them on Zoom, or do we see the hearts of kids and the passions and the strengths in each one of them? So talk to us, how do you keep that as a priority, the relational human side?
Yeah, so there are two things that come to mind, Tom. One is like as a leading question, like co-leading, if people are asking, how does that impact student achievement? And how does that, you know, those are questions that we're really good at asking and we have been for 20 years or more, okay? But just pairing that with one additional question, like how does that practice help that student feel seen? How does that practice help amplify student voice? I mean, whatever that second question is, how does that passion help students kind of flex or lean into their strengths to grow and extend their learning? Like that would be one strategy that I think we could all walk away from. And probably most people are already doing that or informally, but just to be really mindful and listen for, like, here's a super quick example. We have people who visit our school just to see the cool stuff teachers, not just cool, but important stuff teachers are doing often. And sometimes when visiting teachers come, they will ask as a leading question, talk to me about student achievement and how do your mobile maker spaces help make a difference and move the dial as it's measured by tests. And I know because I've asked them, a lot of times they're not asking for themselves. It's a little bit out of getting ready to go back to their administrators and try to justify something that they inherently kind of qualitatively saw energy, child-centered energy, and they saw how it could help a whole child, but they were in that justification mode, like, okay, how am I going to sell this? Because, you know, so I would just say by practicing leading with that extra question, that I think that's something we could all do. And maybe the question has relationships in it. Like, how does this deepen authentic relationships where we're seeing kids' identity and coming alongside them so that they know we care and that we see them? Not just as a class, but as a person. Then the second thing, Tom, is just keeping the context of, a lot of people have said, oh, so now that you had this distance learning thing you did, and maybe there'll be some elements of it moving forward, we got to see what it was like not to have the litany of standardized national assessments and state assessments. Okay, didn't really see that much change, or maybe we did, but here's the caution that I give people along that thinking is, in an emergency matter of moments, we did what we did collectively, and teachers did that. The system before that probably over-prioritized and hyper-focused on assessment, and again, I'm not saying assessment's bad. Meaningful assessment is really good, meaningful assessment, but there's a huge difference, like years and years and years of resources and PD and data team meetings and PLC meetings were geared more towards this one thing. So just to remove it temporarily on an emergency, quick heads up basis where everyone is kind of in trauma dealing with other important things, it's not an apples to apples comparison. So I would just point that out to people and give yourselves a little bit of grace. If you didn't quite get as far into innovation and strengthening and deepening relationships as you were just trying to figure out how to use some of these electronic platforms for video conferencing, like that's okay. And if that's how we're judged, I'd say the problem is more on the people on the outside looking in. So just imagine the power, though, if we spent 1 or 5 or 10 or 20 years investing resources and research and support into cultivating relationships, celebrating, supporting those in pursuit of more motivated and personalized learning. Imagine what that would look like, because we will get there, but don't mistake that for the month or two of things that happened last year and think that that was our best. That was us surviving and rallying together, and the best is yet to come.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. So well said. So one final question for you, then we got to run. We've got educators, school and district leaders, you know, lots of uncertainty looking towards this coming school year, lots of unknowns still at this point. What's one piece of new advice that you have for school and district leaders that you would give to them right now looking towards next school year?
I would just say listen and converse, listen to one another, like just really with the intent to actually change your mind a little bit, or at least inform your decision making. So this is the advice that helps me the most when I'm talking to students, when I'm talking to families, when I'm talking to teachers. It doesn't mean that everything I hear is like the compass is going to be spinning around and I'm going to be changing my mind, but it really means, like, from a deep empathy standpoint, people will tell you what they're wrestling with, what's hard, the barriers that are in front of them from actually making a difference for kids, like right if one thing could get extra support or change. So I would say if we all approached that, and then just from a listening mindset, and then to the best of our ability took what people were actually telling us was hard or that we might be able to help with, and in future conversations and work and decisions, use that to guide it, we will collectively be better for kids.
Brad, your passion radiates. Proud to call you a friend. Thank you so much for your time today. That's Brad Gustafson, everybody. Brad, appreciate you being on here. Thanks for investing the time, and keep leading the way.
Thanks, Tom. We'll